As a compositor, I worked on, Where the Wild Things Are, Harry Potter, Clash of Titans, Tinker Tailor, which was one of my favorite movies, actually. Everest, as the movie is called, was kind of one of the kind of bigger compositing jobs that I worked on. I was a lead on that. And what else? Then when you go into supervising, most famously, I've been the Icelandic supervisor for Game of Thrones.
Hi, and welcome to the VFX Artist Podcast. On today's episode, I have Jerry Arnason, an Icelandic VFX supervisor. During today's discussion, I'm looking to find out more about his journey into becoming a VFX supervisor, as well as to discuss his role on big shows such as Game of Thrones. I hope you enjoy the show.
Hello, Kofi.
Oh, hi, Jerry. Hi, how are you?
I'm good. Finally.
Finally. Thank you so much for taking your time out. I know you're very busy and I'm very appreciative of your time.
No, it's my pleasure. I'm flattered that you're interested in talking to me anyway. So
yeah, no, I'm very intrigued and impressed, basically, ever since we connected on Instagram recently. I guess based on mutual interest in the VFX world, I guess I looked up on your Instagram and I realized what you do, and it's very intriguing, and it relates, because although I work in the VFX industry as well as a match move artist, I've always wanted to be an on-set data capture. But then later on, I realized it's quite demanding when you have a family. So I chose not to pursue it in the end. So, it's still a world that intrigues me. So I wanted to know more about it. So if you don't mind, would it be possible to introduce yourself and just let people know what you do?
Sure. So my name is Jörundur Arnason, or Yuri, as everybody calls me.
Okay, yes.
And I'm a VFX supervisor based in Reykjavik, Iceland. I work maybe 50% here in Iceland and then 50% abroad, all kinds of places. So, my background is I came from post-production, although I've always been quite involved with on-set things. Due to here in Iceland, we're quite a few, so we need to kind of be jack of all trades as well. So I started dealing with on-set stuff very early in my career. Probably the biggest part of my post-production career was as a compositor. And I worked for almost 5 years for Framestore, which had a department here in Iceland, which my good friend founded when he came back. He's an Icelandic guy called Daði Einarsson, and he had been working for Framestore in London for many years. And when he moved back, he basically opened up a department here. So, and that kind of my work with Framestore kind of cemented and kind of gave me the hours and the years in working on high-end Hollywood movies and big commercials and stuff like that.
Just to give people some context, are you able to tell us some of the shows that you've worked on?
So as a compositor, I worked on, Where the Wild Things Are, Harry Potter, Clash of Titans, Tinker Tailor, which was one of my favorite movies actually. Everest, as the movie is called, was kind of my one of the kind of bigger compositing jobs that I worked on. I was a lead on that, and what else? I mean, then when you go into supervising, most famously, I've been the Icelandic supervisor for Game of Thrones scanning here. Okay, like we've done a lot of really, really large scale 3D scanning or photogrammetry scanning. And also I've supervised for Black Mirror and tons of tons of pretty good shows, I would definitely say. I guess I'm probably always most famous for my work with Game of Thrones. I mean, that is a big series for sure.
I probably like to touch on that later on, but I'm just curious about what, if you don't mind explaining what a VFX supervisor does in the role of VFX.
Well, you know, it's I wouldn't say, it's probably one of the lesser contained job descriptions in our world, because I feel like most other things is kind of quite defined nowadays. But VFX supervisor, I mean, you're basically the dad of either the project or the dad of a on-set capture situation. So what you basically do is you go in and you work as a, kind of like a technical producer slash director, and in defining, you know, in prep, you kind of help work with the producers and the director in terms of what they want, and you kind of then start working with the various logistical and technical people in terms of how to achieve that. But the first task is to define what are we doing, what's our aim here, and then you start building a plan from that in prep, and once you have that plan, then you crew up. You know, usually I do a lot of stuff just by myself, but if it's some of the bigger jobs, I might have a assistant with me or a data wrangler with me. And you basically, you know, get in touch with all of the heads of the other departments that you need to be working with, and coordinate between those, you know. Also, you are quite involved in kind of what we call breaking down scripts, and so basically defining what should be visual effects, and and then defining how those visual effects should be to arrive to a number which can become a bid then that you can send to them, and they can start looking at the financing for that.
Of course,
there's
a lot involved and a lot of responsibility as well.
It's a great fun job, but it's definitely there's a lot of pressure on a lot of the time. I mean, it's kind of I can imagine that your viewers, a lot of them are in post still, you know. So we all know the 3 months long crunch, you know, where you're steadily working overtime, constantly for 3 months or whatever. How tiring and exhausting that can be. Most of the time you avoid that in the supervisor role, but instead you get maybe the equivalent of a month's intensity in a week or something, you know. So it can be very, very high pressure. But if you have maybe the personality that kind of rises to that, then you'll have a lot of fun. But if you don't like the pressure, it won't be too much fun. I think, of course. Because it's not gonna go away.
I'm just very curious about how you ended up in the 3D or VFX industry. As in, I mean, did you always know that you wanted to work in 3D, or when did you realize that you were interested in that field?
So, I mean, I actually wouldn't say I'm particularly 3D now, but even though, of course, as a supervisor, I work with all of it, but kind of my grounding is compositing maybe. But I actually used to do quite a bit of 3D before I went into compositing. But I think, like, I for com in kind of complete chance, I ran into Photoshop 1.0, way back. And then, you had maybe a couple of schools that were doing good, like CG animation and stuff like that, but you didn't really have any real VFX schools at that time. So no, and we didn't really at that time, the word VFX wasn't really even all that known,
Yeah, of course.
so and what that entailed, what was behind it, but as soon as I ran into Photoshop, I fell in love right away. It was like the tool I've always wanted my whole life without knowing,
Of
so.
course.
So I got pretty good with that pretty quickly and got into the advertising industry in Denmark. I was living in Copenhagen then, and I got into some higher end agencies there, and those agencies were very involved in doing like interactive CD-ROMs was the rates back then, and through that one of my superiors there was working on 3D animation, so that's how I kind of got involved with that first. And then the 3D animation systems were extremely expensive. I think like a Softimage license was like $50,000 or something like that,
Yeah, of
so
course, yeah.
it wasn't for an individual to kind of jump into that. And
Yeah, of course.
also, I learned about through my friend, I learned about two guys in Iceland called Dade, who I ended up working for in Framestore, Dade Einarsson, and Aron Hjaltason, who's the creative director of Framestore LA now, Los Angeles. And they were working in a company here called Oz in Iceland, called Oz, which were kind of the first visual effects slash TV commercial animation graphics company outside of London. Through my friend there, I kind of got a little bit of an insight to what they were doing, which I thought was super exciting. And from there on, I kind of just went deeper and deeper into it. And before you know it, like around the 2000, I was doing regular freelancing. And then I've run a couple of companies in my time,
Course.
and with different kind of emphasis. But around kind of like maybe 2002 or something, I was basically working as a compositor full time. So yeah.
Oh yeah, sure. And how big is the VFX industry in Iceland?
It's very small, it's maybe, I don't know, maybe we're like 300, 400 individuals at the most, and it's a very, then you're almost like including people that are maybe more in gaming but have worked in visual effects as well. And so the gaming industry is pretty big here, but the visual effects is very small. And this really that's not really, there's one real company with a big post-production. My company doesn't have a big post-production. I will be doing more post-production going forward, but yeah, I would say it's me more as a on-set service provider, Like a supervisor,
Of
so it's
course.
because I have my partners in Denmark, for example, who have a big post-production.
Okay.
So I do post-production, but most of the heavy 3D and stuff is done in Denmark then.
I get you.
But yeah, I would say it's mainly two companies doing the big jobs here. So,
Oh, yeah,
and
sure.
my main jobs here in Iceland are all kind of foreign, you know. So
Oh,
it's
yeah.
these big titles that want to film in Iceland. They want to scan some environment. They want to do some plates and stuff like that. And that's where I come into the
Oh, yeah,
picture.
sure. Yeah, because I'm looking at your feed on Instagram, I realize you travel quite a lot. As a VFX supervisor, how what's your day to day like? As in, on a typical day, how many hours do you work?
I mean, a typical day would probably be like waking up very early, you know, like 5, 6 or something, getting ready, and then you know, being on set super early, like 7, and then start rolling the cameras maybe 9, and then you roll. It depends where you are in the world, you know, because there's different rules for what a film, what a whole day is. Like in Scandinavia, it's 8 hours. In England, it's 10 hours. In Iceland, it's 10 hours. Sometimes it's 12 hours. In China, there's no rules. It's just they go
Oh, yeah,
24
sure.
hours,
Yeah.
you know, which I've done also.
Oh, yeah.
So you do your filming, and that usually involves, you know, quite a lot of work, like quite intense work. You're super busy the whole time. You're making notes, you're doing measurements, you're talking to departments, you're standing by the monitor discussing issues with the director, making decisions on the fly. Hopefully there's a good plan and the plan is kind of working, but in general, the only consistent thing you can really rely on is that the plan will never be executed exactly as you planned it, because you know life will always throw you some curveballs. So you have
Of
to
course.
be able to make decisions as they come along.
Yeah, sure, of course.
Then once you're done doing that, depending on if you're alone or if you have assistance and stuff like that, then when you get back, you need to back up all your data. You need to usually sort your notes and write them up. Maybe do some shorthand on set, and then you need to do them better once you get back to the hotel. And then you basically maybe drink, have a beer, and crash off exhaustion, you
Of
know.
course,
And then we go again next day, you know. So
But do you think it's something recommendable for someone that's looking to get into that field? I mean, how does it work with your family life, for example? Is it
Yeah,
recommendable?
but I mean, I have 5 kids, so I would say this job is both extremely family unfriendly, but it's also very friendly, I would say. So, but yeah, I would definitely say you need a good wife for sure, because
Of course, yeah.
you're gonna disappear, and you're not gonna be able to,
Yeah, that's
oh,
true.
you know, almost not even talk on the phone, you know,
Yeah.
for some periods, you know.
Of
So
course.
you need a very good spouse to
Of
kind of
course.
back you up for
Yeah.
with that. But I
Yeah,
have
that's true.
5 kids, and when I'm so between jobs, I have quite a lot of free time and a lot of flexibility, and you know, I try to kind of use that to you know, and it's very nice having those. Like, I can spend days with my kids and stuff like that, which
Of
maybe
course.
people who are 9 to 5 are not able to do, you know.
Yeah, of
So,
course.
but
Yeah, that's true.
also your kids need the routine, so you're not like going to school and taking them out of school or anything like that. But there's other, you know, you have other options. You can do stuff that other people can't do, and also another thing for me that's very nice about the about the onset stuff. I wouldn't say supervisor stuff, but more like the onset stuff. A lot of the time, because I'm executing somebody else's plan, mm-hmm. and they are going to take care of the post-production.
Yeah.
A lot of the time I do my handoff of notes mm-hmm. and data and so on, and then I'm clear, you know. Then I don't need to, then it's out of my system, and mm-hmm. I'm sure you know yourself how you can for months and months have these problem shots in the back of your head, and and you're sitting in your living room with your family, but you're still trying to find a solution for your work, you know. So so I don't get that when I'm doing the onset stuff. When I leave the set and leave my and I do the handover, it's kind of like it's out of my system, and I can be completely
makes sense.
Full attention on my family and stuff.
Of course, So what do you have to do to ensure that everything goes right on set? And like as well as what advice are you generally giving to directors or studios when it comes to supervising?
Everybody is, you know, you need to follow, I would say, as a supervisor, you should basically take your personality traits and try and maximize them. So I'm very interested in the other departments. I'm very interested in filmmaking in general. Mm-hmm. I'm quite well versed in storytelling and kind of the finer points of the artistry, so to speak. Not so much the craft, but the artistry. So I would definitely say I have a lot of success with kind of interpreting directors and talking to them, and they really mm-hmm. respond positively to me. There's definitely much more data focused guys than me, for sure. I of course make sure to get the data that's needed, and if I have time I get extra data like anybody, but you know I'm approaching it more, my personality is more to go to set and be there, and I would definitely give that as a important advice, mm-hmm. advice is mm-hmm. to make sure that you're very in the now and you're mm-hmm. very much present, you know. Mm-hmm. Don't get lost in making notes and mm-hmm. and you know organizing your data and stuff like that. That's all important, but what's even more important is that you're there and you're kind of taking everything in terms mm-hmm. of what's happening and in terms of what conversations is going on. Not that it's ideal or anything, but forgetting a piece of data is better than not hearing an important conversation on set, you know. So for me, I'm the kind of personality, and I get along with people quite easily. I think I'm very good at being present, and of course with the years and stuff, like I become quite calm, you know. It takes quite a bit to kind of stress me out, you know, to be stressed out is really never helpful, mm-hmm. even if you are, you can't of course do anything about it, but it's definitely something you should try and resist as much as you can.
I'm sure you've been asked a lot about this, but I'm just wondering about if you're able to tell us a bit more about your work on Game of Thrones.
Yeah, I can. I mean, so the way it came about was actually I met the producer, the VFX producer of Game of Thrones. I think I met him in season 3 or something. Mm-hmm. They were shooting, and then they were shooting principal photography.
Okay.
And Steve Kulback is his name. He was kind enough to, after a long, hard day, to take the time out and have a beer with me in the hotel lobby that they were staying in. Mm-hmm. And we just had a kind of very informal talk, you know, and just talk general about the business. And he kind of asked me a couple of questions about me, and and then, you know, all good, and really nothing came of it at that point. But then when season five came around, the decision was made to not go and shoot a couple of locations here in Iceland, not go for principal photography and on these locations. But the I think especially the VFX team really wanted these locations. So I was called in, I actually talked to the Icelandic producer of the production services company who were servicing Game of Thrones. And he was kind of laying out this problem. And I said, well, you know, I've been doing some photogrammetry. I've been playing around with that. And, you know, I think definitely you could definitely get some good set pieces if we if we went to these beaches. It was especially one beach, and it was mainly one beach that we did that. We did a very big cliff there, close to the beach as well. But the main problem was a fairly big beach, very spectacular beach in Iceland. And and yeah, and we started discussing it, and then we involved Steve Kulback and Joe Bauer. Joe Bauer, who is the overall supervisor of Game of Thrones, and I did a couple of kind of proof of concept scans for them. And they liked it enough to say, okay, let's try it at least, you know. And so we did. And it actually turned out pretty well. And that was our first scan. And that was for the climactic scene in season five called Heart Home. If I remember right, where they are basically landing. It's a beach landing, basically, you know. So what they did there, they shot this the scene in an Irish old abandoned quarry, like a mining quarry, and dressed that. And then they got my digital assets, which was all these really unique cliff rock formations. And they basically kind of maybe used them as Legos to dress the scene with those assets, you know. So that was kind of the foundation of a workflow that turned out to be very successful through the scenes. And then of course the big I did it got bigger with so season six I was not involved with, but then season seven they asked me to get involved there, and then we that was even bigger, you know, and a lot more scans and stuff like that. And I was also a little bit involved with the plate shooting there, so we were scanning and shooting live action plates from a helicopter in the same flight basically. And then in season eight we kind of stepped it up another gear, you know, and that's when I made my by far my biggest captures, you know, and also the most crazy plates I've shot so far, you know.
Are you always capturing on from the helicopter, or do you tend to do
very smart? Much yes right. I mean I do drones as well, but you know, very often, and this is I've got at least one job coming up now that's the same kind of thing, that we start making, we start planning both out, you know, and we start calculating both. And because with a drone in Iceland, you the locations are often very remote, very difficult to get to. So that means that if you're going with a drone approach, then you need super jeeps, which are very expensive to rent. And then it's going to take days. Whereas if you jump in a helicopter, you can get it all done in one day. You don't need any of these super jeeps, no hotel, no food, no extra days work on me and so on. So it more often than not turns out to be cost effective to use the helicopter.
Yeah, sure.
And also I use an absolutely amazing pilot called Jon Kjartan.
Yeah.
Nicknamed Spaden, or the Blade, as it's called in English. And and he knows, like, he knows Iceland like the back of his hand. So we can be flying in the highlands, and we might be done with our main targets, and now we're just looking for targets of opportunity.
Okay. Yes.
And he'll know like the most crazy stuff, you know. So
yeah, of course.
And we're kind of three guys that have done this, you know. There's a producer called Ali Casada, and then it's me, and then it's Jon Kjartan, the pilot. And we're kind of the three amigos. We can solve it all really with course, a helicopter.
Sounds like a good team. I'm just curious, what are the fun or the worst parts of being a VFX supervisor or being on set data capture?
The worst, I mean, the worst is the same as for any people. I feel like it's when you feel like you're not performing, or you're letting down, or not even maybe you're nothing to do with you, just the weather is not there, or whatever, you know. That's all. You always feel bad when things don't come off, you know, for whatever reason, you know. So that's always kind of a bad feeling. The best part of being a supervisor, I mean, on the other side, the best part is when maybe you run into some difficulty and you manage to solve it on the fly, and solve it really well, and then you'll get so much love and appreciation from your director and your producer and stuff like that. So so that's probably, you know, it's kind of a euphoric high after that, you know. If you rap, I remember I had a shoot like that in Berlin, and I was like on a high for the rest of the trip there, you know.
Yeah, of course.
It went so well, and I was very stressed for that shoot, so you know. It's definitely a job for a little bit of a, if you're a little bit of a adrenaline junkie, for sure, you know. I can't say that it's definitely not a approach for a stable, stable, normal life. That's not what you're going to get with this, that's for sure.
Of course. Oh, yeah. I'm not going to take too much of your time. I'm just wondering, do you have any memorable moments so far?
Well, I have very many memorable moments in the helicopter, because our pilot is also like a kind of Hollywood, like he's an extreme pilot, like he's very good, and he'll fly into fishes. You can see some of it on my Instagram, you know. And what you don't see there, though, is what's going on in your stomach and stuff like that, you know. And I'm often queasy for 2 days afterwards. Oh, you know? But so far I haven't puked, which many do, and I'm hoping to keep my record so far.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Memorable moments is both the successes, for example, in Berlin with Bart Timmer, the director, and Sebastian, the DOP. Like, my dinner there was absolutely delightful. It was a beautiful moment. Everybody was so happy and good food. And like, another moment was a scan we did for Mandalorian. We landed on the side of the what used to be the youngest mountain in Iceland then. It was only 5 years old, and it was way up in the highlands. I've never gone so far into the highlands, and we landed on the side of this volcano, which was 5 years old, and it was it was just like being on the moon or something, you know.
Yeah.
And then I did 2 months in China doing a movie, which was also like that will be with me for the rest of my life.
Yeah, sure.
It was amazing. Yeah.
Okay, amazing. What advice would you give to someone or anyone aspiring to do what you do?
Yeah, I mean, be brave, be honest, be brave, work hard. That's definitely all of these things you need for this. You would, you know, be honest, you know, call for help, or you know, let people know when you're in a pickle, and you'll be surprised how like filmmakers, it's real family. It's kind of almost like being in the army, you know. We're all in together, you know. So and if you want to try and get into it, you know, be the type of guy that's not too worried about what you're gonna get out of it, but be more worried about how can you deliver the best, you know, always. And if you do that, then the people that you're working for, they'll make sure to make to reward you both with better and better jobs, and hopefully also better and better income, you know. So
okay, amazing. Thank you so much for your time. I've learned a lot, and I really appreciate it.
My pleasure. And good luck with your with your career as well, Kofi.
Of course.
And maybe you'll reevaluate your thinking around the VFX supervisor role.
Yeah. Well, I mean, right now I have my 2-year-old son, and like you said, you need a supportive wife. My wife is supportive, but she'd rather me being around.
Of course. And that's, I mean, I can speak to that of course I've missed out on a lot of stuff that I wouldn't want to miss out of, really, you know, because I wasn't around or something. But you know, this is a little bit life, you know. You and if you dwell on that stuff, then you can maybe get a little bit bummed out about that. But I have 5 kids, so I've had
Of course.
5 takes to of kind course, of maybe try and get the experience in there, you know. So thanks for inviting me, and
it's a pleasure to have you. Thank you.
And yeah,